Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about race in America, attitudes about race and racism, and how they differ between Americans of color and white Americans, and how it is in the future we're going to come to grips with our increasing diversity, whether or not, in fact, we will do that. Our guest for the program is Joe Fagan. He's a sociologist. He's part of the faculty at University of Florida. He has written a great many books and articles dealing with race and racism, also other issues including gender and sexism, affirmative action, urban sociology. He's the immediate past president of the American Sociological Association, and he's visiting the campus to give a talk. This is part of the MillerCom series, and we've had a lot of these folks on our show over the years. It's been a great source of guests for us. And if you're interested in hearing his talk, you're in and around Champaign-Urbana. These are always free and open to the public. Anyone who would like to attend is welcome. He'll be speaking at 4 o'clock this afternoon at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus, so feel free to attend. But also, we have these folks on our show to bring them to a wider audience, and we certainly would be pleased to welcome anybody into the conversation that would like to call in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you're welcome to call. All we ask of callers is people just try to be brief so we can keep our program moving along, accommodate as many different folks as possible. But anyone's welcome to call. Well, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I'm sure that you have and many other people have done samples and surveys. They've gone out and they've asked various kinds of people the question, is there racism in the United States? When you do ask people, and particularly, let's say, you ask European Americans, white Americans, what sort of responses do you get to that kind of question?
Well, that exact question hasn't been asked in surveys. It would be a good one to ask. But if you talk to whites like I have, I've interviewed probably 300 or 400 whites for several studies that I've done, as well as 500 African Americans in 7 studies there. If you interview whites, most whites will suggest to you that they're not racist, the famous I'm not a racist but statement. And they will also argue that there isn't really serious and fundamental racism in this country, although many whites will admit there's still some problems here and there, scattered problems of racism here and there, that are, for most whites, they see this as limited to the white supremacist fringe and not as something infecting or pervading white America generally.
Then if you ask, say you ask Americans of color, basically the same question, the response you would get is going to be very different.
Yes, the research data on discrimination that black Americans and other people of color face suggests that overwhelming majority of African Americans face discrimination on a regular basis. That's not just opinion. It comes from numerous research studies. For example, Larry Bobo and his associates, Bobo is a professor at Harvard. He and his associates did surveys in Los Angeles of black, Latino, and Asian workers, and they found 60% of black workers reporting discrimination in the workplace alone, just in the workplace, in the last year. And the proportion reporting discrimination in the workplace went up with education, so that the blacks with a college education, 80% of them reported discrimination in the workplace, and 95% of the blacks with a graduate, postgraduate education, PhD or business degree, reported discrimination. The percentages for Latinos and Asians were somewhat lower, but still large minorities of the Latino and Asian workers reported discrimination, including overwhelming majorities of those who had advanced degrees. So discrimination is reported widely by people of color in this country in employment, in housing, in public accommodations.
Is there some way to, for anyone who might look at the result of a study like that and say, well, you're still dealing with anecdotal evidence. You're asking people about their experiences, and they're simply saying to you, well, yes, this has been my experience. Is there a way to get at it in a way that gets away from anecdote so that for anyone who would say, well, I want hard evidence, something that doesn't rely on someone saying, well, yes, I've experienced it and then this is my experience. Does such evidence exist?
Yes. The acid test of discrimination, for particularly for whites who are skeptical about what people of color say, are the housing audit studies. And in these studies, they've also done it in mortgage loans and a little bit in employment, but the best ones are in housing. They'll send a black and a white and sometimes a Latino and an Asian tester. These are renters or home buyers who are dressed in similar ways and they have similar economic stories, and they go to landlords. And they've done this in the last 4 or 5 years in Fresno, California, Montgomery, Alabama, New Orleans, Louisiana, San Antonio, Texas, Washington, D.C., and some other places. And back in 89, the federal government did it in 25 cities across the country where they send in these testers. And in the nationwide study where they did 3,800 test audits in 25 cities, they found that black renters faced discrimination 50% of the time compared to the white partner, and that black homebuyers face discrimination 59% of the time compared to their white paired partner. So these are acid tests where they use paired partners. These aren't anecdotal things. They're actual accounts of what happens to people. The more recent studies from Fresno to D.C. are showing even higher rates. In the range of 58 to 78% of the time, the black renter, compared to his or her partner, faces discrimination in looking for housing. Now, the discrimination is often what I call happy face discrimination or runaround discrimination. What will typically happen in these paired testing studies is the black tester will show up looking for an apartment in a historically white area, white apartment complex. And the manager or the landlord will say, oh, I'm sorry, I'd love to rent that apartment to you. I know it was advertised in the paper, but it's just been rented. And then your paired partner shows up 3 hours later, and not only is the apartment still available, but the landlord or the manager puts his arm around you and, you know, gives you the red carpet treatment. We're just delighted to show it to you. And the rates of discrimination are still 58 to 78% of the time, and that's today. Probably in any city in this country, although we don't have these studies in all the cities, but in many cities, most of the time when blacks go to rent, they get some of this subtle runaround, in-your-face, happy-face kind of discrimination. So when whites say, well, blacks are paranoid about racism, see racism under every rock, actually there's a lot of racism that blacks don't see because it's this kind of runaround thing. And unless you have a paired partner, like you do in the audit studies, if you're black and you go to rent an apartment and they tell you it's just been rented, you don't know whether they're lying to you or not. So there's a lot of racism you don't see that we know is there because the audit studies demonstrate that this kind of housing discrimination is still very widespread in the U.S.
So yeah. when you look at, say, then this gulf between African-Americans who say they not only do they know racism exists, but they experience it and have experienced it. And white Americans who say, well, golly, you know, we've had the civil rights movement. African Americans can vote. They can go eat in any restaurant they want. They can go to college. My kids go to school with their kids. They are in all fields of endeavor. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're politicians. The Secretary of State of the United States is an African-American. What's all this talk about racism about? And why is it that white people don't see it, unless perhaps it's because, well, if they don't have any direct experience of it, don't have any close black friends who would say, let me tell you what happened to me, that it's just so foreign to their experience that they say, well, what are you talking about, racism?
I think your last comment is the accurate one. The problem is that black and white Americans live in two worlds for the most part. Most whites don't have any close black friends. Most whites read the newspapers, which seem to be also in denial that racism is a problem in this country. So most well-intentioned, well-meaning whites simply don't know how much racism there is unless they had a friend they were trying to find housing with. Then they would quickly learn about racism. We also have acid tests studies, there's a law professor, Ian Ayers at Yale University, who has done two studies in Chicago with car dealerships, sending black women, white women, black men, and white men in to buy similar cars. And guess who gets the best deals on a very consistent basis? By a long shot, it's the white men. And then the white women. There's some discrimination against women. They don't get quite as good a deal. Mm-hmm. And then in one study, it was black men who got the worst deal, and the other study was black women. But blacks get much worse deals than whites do. And Ayers has also done studies of bail setting by judges in the Northeast. And he finds judges setting higher bail for black blacks who are charged with crimes and for whites charged with similar crimes, even though the bail bondsman set the rates as cheaper for black arrestees than for whites. And the bail bondsmen know the probability you're actually going to run because they lose money if they guess wrong. But judges set it higher, apparently because their image of blacks as dangerous is in their minds. So there are a number of studies besides the housing, and it's lack of white experience with the discrimination that's going on against blacks every day. And it's, I think most black Americans I've talked to would say, yeah, there's been progress since legal segregation and since the 50s. Nobody's denying there hasn't been progress. But the problem is the discrimination and the racism is so widespread and so deep still that it causes serious problems for black folks in their everyday lives. And the accumulated effect of racism in this society is terrible. For example, the average black person in America lives 6 to 7 years less than the average white person in America. The average black family in America earns about 60% of the average white family in terms of family income. And the average black family has about 10% of the wealth of the average white family. So the accumulated impact of racism over nearly four centuries now, including current patterns of discrimination, is to give blacks shorter lives, more pain, more misery from the everyday realities of racism and discrimination. And part of the reason it doesn't look quite as bad to whites is blacks fight back. You know, you don't want to present just a portrait of black people as victims because they're constantly fighting back and contending and struggling against this daily acid rain of racism.
I should introduce again our guest, and we have a couple of callers to bring into the conversation. Our guest is Joe Fagan from the Department of Sociology at University of Florida. He has written a great deal about race and racism in America, among other things. He's here visiting the campus to talk about the topic and was good enough to come spend some time with us to give you the opportunity to hear from him. The number in Champaign-Urbana, by the way, if you want to join the conversation, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's start in here with some callers. Let's go to Southern Illinois for the first person in line here, line four. Hello.
How are you doing?
Yes.
I hear what you're saying there. That's pretty sad, you know, that that still exists and continues, you know. But, you know, my question or my thoughts are that, you know, I went to school in the early years in Miami, and I experienced a lot of racism myself. I'm a white person, you know, and I experienced that from the black kids. You know, they gang up on me and everything like that, and that's what built that in me. Now I've conquered it, and now I try not to be racist towards anyone the best that I can. But it seems to me nowadays, in an adulthood stage, that I wonder how much of those the black groups. It just expect it from me, so they just automatically give it to me because I experience it all the time, you know. I can kind of understand because, you know, it's ignorance and on both sides, but I have to blame it on the parents more than anything because it seems to me that the parents instill these things into their children to impart some kind of reason for the reason they believe, you know, just kind of like get back at each other, something like that, you know, and it kind of just continues on there. I don't know where it is, and I know we can't take wealth from one group and give it to the next, but that's what it seems to be, you know, on the fact that where you have to hire, I forget what it's called, but anyhow, you had to hire so many before, over, regardless of qualifications, you know, and it seemed to me Martin Luther King, as best I can tell, I never met the man, I never heard him, I was just hear little tracks, you know, that, you know, don't hire a man because of, or I have to put it in paraphrase it the best I can, don't hire a man on what I look like, but on what I can do or whatever. I forget exactly how he said it, but I'm sure you know it. You know, it's just sad that that exists. I mean, I try to conquer it the best I can. Sometimes, you know, from childhood experiences, it kind of gets on me, and if I'm having a bad day, it just goes somewhere. But I try not to allow it to happen. You know, I'm born again Christian, and maybe that helps. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. You see, we have our church is connected with a black church, and we have some of these guys that come out of from Indiana somewhere, and it, every time when I was first coming in, I was a little skeptic, you know, but it wasn't the first thing on my mind, but that seemed just the first thing they do is talk about that, you know, and it's like, man, just wedged a thorn there, you know, and it just bothered me. I think I won't hang up for a moment because every time I hang up, I usually get thrown around my conversation. Maybe I might be able to challenge just one point or so.
Well, okay, the caller raises several points. I don't know which are you would like to deal with, but respond however you would like.
Yes, I think your comments are shared by many white Americans, the point of view you're arguing. And I think you're right that people of all racial groups and ethnic groups can be prejudiced toward others. This is a problem we all need to work on of treating everybody with respect in the society. However, what I'm talking about is the much more fundamental reality of the United States exploiting and oppressing African Americans for nearly 400 years now, extracting huge amount of resources and labor from them to build up the nation, and continuing to discriminate against them on a very large scale. For example, I was talking about those housing studies that show widespread high levels of discrimination against black people looking for housing. If you or I were black, we would be very angry about that and very upset about the fact that we spend our lives, over our entire lives, struggling to get decent housing for our children. Now, as a white man, I'm 62 years old, I've never faced any discrimination because of my race. I certainly haven't faced discrimination in looking for housing many times for my family, in schooling, in public accommodations, in restaurants. So the issue here is not simply attitudes. It's about the practices of discrimination that are widespread in the society. For the most part, we white Americans face very little or no discrimination at the hands of black Americans. But black Americans spend their lives facing thousands and thousands. If I were a 62-year-old black man, based on my research, I probably would have faced somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 cases of discrimination by whites over my lifetime if I were a black man. Now, as a white man who's 62, I've never faced any discrimination from black Americans. Now, there may be some white men who have faced discrimination, but it's relatively infrequent compared to the problems that blacks face. So I think we need to focus on action, on discrimination, on practices. And whites in this country still practice a lot of discrimination against African Americans. That has to be changed.
I agree. I'll just say two quick things and I'll hang up. You know, it's like you was talking about the government or whatever it was or whoever it was extorting from them. I forget exactly how it was. But, you know, we look at Uncle Sam as an actual existing creature of some type, or I'd like to say it that way. I don't know how to put it. But he really doesn't exist.
I was really talking about slaveholders who exploited the slave labor.
Oh, okay. You get a little further than I am. Okay, I'll say one more thing and I'll hang up. You know, when I was younger, I wore long hair. I refused to cut my hair. Just the past 6 years, I cut it off. even in the white community, I've experienced some type of not dislike because of the way I looked. I mean, it doesn't matter the color of the skin. There's all kinds of things to be angry about, and you know, when you experience those things, it builds anger in you, and you carry that anger, and you got to deal with that anger somehow or another, or else you put it into your children, you know. And I've got children, and I'm trying my best to keep them from, you know, my uncle is married to a black girl, and I, you know, it was kind of hard to deal with it, but I just told them, you know, that's the way God created them. Well, anyway, I'll let you go. I'll just listen. Thank you.
All
bye.
Right. Anything else you want
to add? I think he's moving in the direction of tolerance and his own family. I think that's a good thing. We whites need to encourage each other because increasing numbers of whites do have family members who are coming from the Black and Latino and Asian communities. Unfortunately, many white families disown, you know, the white member of the family who marries into another racial group, and it's time for us whites to develop this tolerant, open-minded, welcoming attitude, respect across groups. But tolerance is not the only problem. The problem in this country is getting rid of the racial discrimination. And we need to enforce our civil rights laws vigorously.
Well, here, and I hope that the people who are on hold will understand, I won't keep you waiting forever, we'll get to you. But here, this is one point that I wanted to get right at. We were talking specifically about instances of discrimination, and one that you mentioned was discrimination in housing. That's against the law. What more can we do than say we pass a law that said you can't do that?
That's a very good question. The problem in this country is that we have a very good rhetoric of equal opportunity and very good laws in regard to equal opportunity, but we don't enforce them vigorously. In the area of housing, one of the recent HUD assistant secretaries, Roberta Achtenberg, estimated a couple years ago that there were 10 million cases of housing discrimination in this country every year. Well, if you look at all the fair housing organizations at the state, local, and federal level, they process maybe 10,000 cases. So only one case of discrimination in 1,000 in this country is processed through the fair housing agencies. And usually those process cases have very mild penalties or no penalties for the law violator, for the discriminator. So the problem with the employment and housing and public accommodations laws in these countries is not that we don't have good laws. We do have good laws. The problem is we, for the most part, don't enforce them or only weakly enforce them. So if we rigorously enforce the fair housing laws, we could make the lives of Black Americans and other people of color much safer, much more pleasant over their lifetimes. But we don't enforce those civil rights laws very, very seriously in this country. As a white man, I can pretty well discriminate, you know, without fear of punishment, with impunity in this country. And if I'm caught, there will be some kind of modest slap on the wrist for discriminating. And I think that's one other piece of data for where we are in this country is that Black Americans have little recourse when they're discriminated against. You can't go to an agency that will enforce the law, usually. Sometimes you can, but usually you can't.
Other callers are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have two people here locally, starting in here next, Urbana. Line one, hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to go back to your point about many Caucasians not being aware that there is discrimination and saying, well, you know, aren't there laws and haven't things improved greatly? And one of the efforts locally and in some other communities is this program called Study Circles, which is five meetings of about 2 hours each with African-Americans and others in the group, in which they are led through a process of questions really focusing on all the kinds of discrimination and prejudice that the African-Americans meet. And that can be very eye-opening. It's really a chance in a group to share and to share life experience. And when people hear the life experience and the not only throughout their lives, but the frequently daily discriminations that the members of the group who are African American meet, it's very eye-opening to the Caucasian members of the group.
Who sponsors these study circles?
YWCA and the City of Champaign. Human Relations Commission. And a number of years ago, the director of the Human Relations Officer for the City of Champaign and the director of the YWCA went and got training. The program was originally started in Lima, Ohio, and there's a video about that community's experience. It also, in interim years, was sponsored by the Rotary Club in Urbana, and they organized it. It's a big project to organize these meetings and find a leader and get people, because it's very important that there be more than one African American in the group. There, you need to have two or three, and they try to keep the groups under 12 because of the need for every time for everybody to talk.
And these are going on now?
These are going on now, and they're being set up for next fall. I think the spring's series may have may just be finishing up this week. But anybody who's interested could call the YWCA at 344-0721 or the City of Champaign Human Relations Officer, and I don't know that number.
Well, certainly the study circles, and there's also another group called the Institutes for the Healing of Racism that does similar kinds of study groups in local cities across the country. In fact, I think the Institutes may have about 200 of these study groups in Britain and the U.S.
Uh-huh.
These are certainly a very good start on beginning to break down the disrespect and the prejudices across racial and ethnic lines. We need many more people learning about other groups and about the prejudices we hold about each other. We need to confront our own prejudices.
Well, and that's one of the helpful things in this is, as I've been in a couple of study groups, the white people really recognizing some of the attitudes that they've had, the assumptions that they've made. And depending on where they are, sort of on the road to complete awareness, it does help move them down the road.
I think it's a very good idea, and the more of those, the better across the country, particularly as we become a multiracial nation. We will eventually be a nation of people of color, where whites will be the minority. It's time for all of us to learn about each other and to respect each other. I think the one thing these study groups need to go beyond, you know, once the level of awareness is developed about racism, is to go on to action.
Yes. In fact, a number of the groups who have met have decided as a group to continue into action, one of which is has been working and gained the cooperation of the two local school districts in setting up a charter school to meet the fact that the African-American students in both school systems have much too high a representation in the behavior disorder and other programs like that, lack of representation in the advanced placement and gifted programs, and again, given their economic level and everything else, aren't performing as you would expect them to if they were white. And so both school districts are working on that problem, but this one study circle has moved into action. And as I say, other study circles have focused on other specific action problems. But you're right that the action then is what's needed. But it does help build more of a supportive mass for laws.
Yeah, I think charter schools are a somewhat controversial solution to some of these things. But I was, when I was talking about action, I was thinking about action against discrimination. We need local fair housing groups that work effectively against housing discrimination that blacks and Latinos and Asians face in every city and town in this country. So I think these study groups need to go on to work against discrimination as well as to work for some positive programs for breaking down intolerance and racist attitudes.
We are a little bit past the midpoint. I appreciate the comments of the caller. We have some other folks we'll get right to, but I do want to introduce again our guest for anyone who's tuned in the last little bit. We're speaking with sociologist Joe Fagan from University of Florida. He has written widely on race and racism in America, also other issues including gender and sexism, affirmative action, urban sociology. He's here to talk on the U of I campus as part of the MillerCom series, his topic, Racism and the Coming White Minority. The talk is this afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center. Anyone who is interested in attending should feel welcome. And also, if you have questions, comments, you want to be a part of this conversation, you can do that too. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Champaign on line number two.
Hello, Dr. Fagan.
Good morning.
Let me give you a quick background because I've been waiting for a long time and I know others want to talk to you too. I'm African American, have a doctorate degree. I'm a professor of law, full professor at the University of Illinois. I grew up in a portion of Jim Crow South. I've experienced all the ignominy of being black in white America, white fountain, black fountain, white school district, white schools, black schools, secondhand books from the white schools, being told to go around to the back of the building if told that at all, experienced the desire encoded in me by my family that education was a way to lift me from the despair of racism in America. And yet here I am, a doctorate degree, University of Illinois, a world-class university, as they say, and I'm still besieged every day, every moment, on and off this campus with racism in housing, racism in terms of racial profiling in apartment stores, on the highway, at the International Airport in Indianapolis recently. As you might imagine, it does cause me to experience conflicting emotions of pain and anger. So I wanted to give you that background. As people cavalierly deal with the issue of race in America, and as you know, that's a very thorny, complex issue. I want to say this, everyone on the study group, I've seen many white people assuage their racial guilt by having a study group and then not doing one positive affirmative thing to eliminate racism in America. I have gone through study groups with white people. I have a jaundiced view about what it really means for them and how it fails to live up to my expectations about action. So I'm pleased to hear you give her some definitive action as opposed to setting up a charter school, which I think is the antithesis of what we want in terms of ending racism in our public schools. I do, however, want to address this issue because now, as you know, California, the largest state, does not have a racial majority. And there has always been talk recently, basically by the white press and white supremacist groups, that Latinos now, 5 years before planned, have become the largest minority group in America. And they say this in a way that I think is very harmful, because I think what it means, if we're not very careful, is that it will pit Latinos against African Americans and that the white racial group will benefit from this form of self-destruction. I am very much concerned that this will be the strategy of the new white minority in dealing with a situation where combined Latinos and African Americans and Asians are in fact the new majority. I'm just very disheartened about the future of racism in America. I had two doctoral students who recently went to St. Louis to purchase housing because that's where they will work, and they were discriminated against in housing. They went back to the Fair Housing Office in St. Louis and got white testers to go out there, and they have filed a complaint with the Fair Housing Administration in St. Louis. Now, these are students with doctoral degrees, African-American, who finally found out that the sting of racism is still there in housing, jobs, and all other phases of our lives. Thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for being patient with us. I'm sorry that you had to wait so long. You want to?
His personal experience is very much in line with the 500 African-Americans I've interviewed across the country in 7 studies. Most of them report the kind of things that he's talking about, everyday racism, day in, day out, from cradle to grave. you face some kind of subtle, covert, or blatant racism that crashes in on your life constantly, causes you misery and pain, shortens your life, makes raising families difficult, makes living in the community difficult, makes doing your job difficult. And if this country's ever going to live up to its rhetoric of liberty and justice for all, which it's a long way from, it's going to have to, whites are going to have to face the fact that most of us who are white either participate actively in this racist practice or we're complicit bystanders standing on the sidelines, and we need to face up to this widespread discriminatory reality in this country. We can't keep sweeping it under the rug with all these cliches that I'm not a racist or I never owned any slaves or my family never owned any slaves. The research data, not Joe Fagan, the research data show very strongly that black Americans face much discrimination in this country. It's not a figment of our imaginations. It's a reality, and it needs to be done away with.
Thank you, Dr. Fagan.
I think the other issue you're raising of Latinos is a very interesting one. And perhaps we can get off on that a minute, since the census data that have just been released in the last month show that the Latino population in the U.S. is growing much faster than even the Census Bureau thought. California is already majority not white. 43% of the young people in California are Latino today. 43% of the kids under 18 are Latino, which means in the near future, 10, 20 years probably, California will be majority Latino. Not just majority not white, but majority Latino. And this issue of whether blacks and Latinos will build coalitions or whether whites will treat many Latinos as honorary whites and try to build a coalition against blacks is a hot issue being debated across the country. I think there's a natural alliance between black Americans and Latinos against discrimination, since both groups face discrimination at the hands of whites, and we whites have more power to discriminate than just about anybody in the country. So it's natural for blacks and Latinos to vote together to get rid of racism in this country. And that has happened in my hometown of Houston, Texas. A black mayor was elected a couple of years ago, Lee Brown, first black mayor in Houston's history. And if it hadn't been for the Latino vote, he wouldn't have been elected mayor. So blacks, Latinos, and Asians voted their common interests and elected a black mayor who supports getting rid of police brutality in the city. He supports the affirmative action program in business to get business set-asides for contractors of color so that the business communities and the communities of color can strengthen and develop. So in Houston, you had an alliance of blacks, Latinos, and Asians voting common interests. In other areas of the country, however, the white community and white media is certainly trying to encourage conflict between blacks and Latinos. You'll notice in some newspapers, including Chicago newspapers, they'll run a story about the growing Latino population in the country. And then frequently right after that, they'll say, well, this signals possible conflict between blacks and Latinos. They will raise that issue of conflict when it isn't there yet, as though the white media are concerned about increasing conflict between blacks and Latinos rather than to allow coalitions to build between blacks, Latinos, and Asians against white racist practices in areas like housing. So I think this coming white minority issue and the growing Latino and Asian population issue is one that deserves much attention and discussion in this country. And if we're going to build a multiracial democracy, whites concerned about ending racism, blacks, Latinos, and Asians, we're going to have to all work together to build a multiracial democracy in this country.
We have just about 10 minutes left. Other callers, we'll try to get in as many people as we can. Our guest is Joe Fagan. He's a sociologist from University of Florida, and he has written a great deal on issues of race and racism in America. We have several people here in line. We'll get in, take them in the order they came in. We'll go next to another Urbana caller, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just have a couple questions. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the kind of racism that African Americans face in the workplace? And then also, if you could give a little advice to someone who's not African American, who's in a workplace where there is racism, and the more covert kind of racism.
Yes, covert racism is and subtle racism are very common patterns in workplaces. And it takes many forms in the workplace. Sometimes it is just a constant petty harassment, questioning a black person's qualifications in the workplace. Black professors frequently report, for example, that for the first few weeks and sometimes throughout a course, the white students are constantly testing them. They'll report the first day of class, students asking, "Do you have a PhD degree?" I've never had my white students or student ever had a student in 35 years of teaching ask me if I had a PhD degree. So you get this kind of constant testing that goes on in the workplace. Are you qualified? Do you belong there?
And then in terms of promotions, have you found a lot of that too?
Yes, I mostly interviewed middle class and upper middle class African Americans. They report a lot of problems with promotions, being passed over. You're a black lawyer in a prominent law firm, and predominantly white law firm, and whites who were hired after you were and who don't bring in as much business and don't do as good a job as lawyers are promoted to partner before you are.
And then
what frequently happens is blacks who've made it in corporate America or in law firms will drop out and start their own businesses. They're so fed up with the failure to move up. What they have a word for it. They call it the concrete ceiling. For women, we've had a number of studies that talk about the glass ceiling. You know, women are not promoted up the line either frequently. But black men and women talk about the concrete ceiling. We just can't get past it. We'll be hired at a decent salary in a decent position in regard to our qualifications, but then we're constantly passed over in spite of excellent work.
And what would you recommend, I'm not African American and there's a lot of racism where I work, that kind of covert racism. And so what would you recommend, how could I be supportive, you know?
Well, there are a number of things you can do in terms of the racism that's expressed. You can stand up to it. In most of the workplaces in this country, whites still tell racist jokes, make off-color comments. They may not use the N-word, but they'll make derogatory comments of various kinds about black employees. They may be subtle. And one of the things as whites we can do in the workplace is say, well, I don't agree with that. So-and-so is an excellent employee, does very well and should be promoted, or we can disagree with racist comments. I think that's at the individual level. I think at the next level, we need to organize as whites and also with people of color in our workplaces to go with them to express concern about racist activities or discrimination in hiring and promotions. You know, there was a couple of years ago, there was a famous Texaco corporate case where some of the leading corporate executives at Texaco were accidentally taped taped. And the tape eventually became public record, where they were making racist comments about their employees. And in part because of that tape, a woman named Roberts, who was the lead plaintiff for the black employees there, they won their case against Texaco, and Texaco settled for a huge amount of money for the discrimination that apparently was going on in the company. I think the company denied it faced discrimination and paid the settlement anyway. But I think in cases like that, whites could have joined with the black employees and supported them in their struggle for fairness in the corporation or in the workplace. This rarely happens. It's rare for whites to get involved with blacks and to support them, such as going with a black employee who's been discriminated against to see her or his boss. Now, this is risky for whites. You know, whites will get punished for this, too. You know, we actually have an N-word for whites who get involved on behalf of black Americans in this country. So there's some risk for whites, but it's a very important risk for whites to take. It has to do with action and not just words.
Okay, thank you.
Good for you.
I'll try and get at least one more person in here. We'll go to the next in line. That's Matt Toon, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
It will really help us if you. Yeah, and you need to kind of speak up for us too, because you're a little hard to hear.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, that's good. Thanks.
Okay, well, there's not much time left, so I'm going to be excessively blunt and brief. I agree with one of the early callers more than some of the latter callers. I just wish to point out that I think there are a lot of white people that are feeling a certain amount of discrimination, very similar to what sometimes is called racial discrimination, but it's happening for other reasons, but it sells better if you call it racial discrimination when you're dealing with other folks. And I think the lowering of Christian morals in this country has a lot to do with that too. I also think that the black professor probably has a life that is hugely better than 90-some percent of all the black people in the continent of Africa, and I think that needs to be considered. I also have extreme doubts that the black people contributed outside of the South to the backbreaking building of this country. I have some concern. We have a lot of jump on the bandwagon revisionist history going here by certain academics. But since our guest is from Florida, I would hope that he knows some real specific things about Florida, and I would like to know, can he tell us something about the amount of on the backs of blacks that the Florida economy was built in the 18 and very early 1900s?
And unfortunately, I can give you about a minute to respond to the caller because we're just almost out of time.
The costs for African Americans are incalculable. James Marchetti estimates that the current worth of the labor stolen from African American slaves in the border states, which included the southern parts of Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois, the amount of the current worth is in the $2 to $4 trillion range of the labor stolen from African Americans who built up this country. It was that black slave labor that built the United States of America in its early phases. The surplus capital generated off the slave plantations was used for things like fighting the Revolutionary War. George Washington was one of the wealthiest men in the colonies because he owned 200 other human beings. Huge amounts of capital were moved from the backs of slaves to white interests during the slaveholding period. After slavery, we had something called the Homestead Act, that gave away the federal government gave away 246 million acres of productive arable farmland, almost entirely to white American homesteaders. 1.5 million, almost entirely white homesteaders, because blacks were excluded. Trina Williams at Washington University estimates that the descendants of those homesteaders are 46 million white Americans today, are the beneficiaries of that one major federal giveaway of land that blacks were excluded from because of racist discrimination in this country. So it's not just the descendants of slaveholders who were benefiting, but 46 million whites alone benefited from that one federal giveaway of land. So that most of us who are white today have benefited significantly, or our families have, over the history of this racist system in America.
I'm sorry to say, are going to have to stop. The topic is much too big for just a 50-minute conversation, but we have used our time. For people here in and around Champaign-Urbana, you'd like to hear more from our guest, Joe Fagan from University of Florida. He'll be talking on the topic racism and the coming white minority. This is part of the MillerCom series today at 4 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. Anyone should feel welcome to attend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.